Okay, so we're skipping the intro here because we've got a screen share going up that I want to mess with. So this is CFI Bootcamp's Power Hour. Welcome if you're new. I'll go through the room here in a little bit and see who I know and who I don't, or who we know, who we don't. And we'll give you some updates about halfway through. So we'll do that. What we're going to do today is with Hobie Tomlinson, which is a safety training AME, asymmetric flight maneuver. So he's going to talk about that. And so we'll get into that here in just a little bit. There's a lot to say about that, so that's good. And he's an expert in the room, so that's good. Really expert in the kingdom, I would say, in the whole kingdom. Speaking of kingdoms, we do have an FAA update for you. I wanted to pass this on to you. Two of them. One of them you should know. If not, your head's been buried in the sand. But the other one is going to make a difference pretty soon. So the first one is that the ACSs and PTSs are all valid now. So you can throw away the old ones. They're no longer valid. And all testing has to be in accordance with those now. If you don't know where those are, you can go to FAA.gov, or best way, the easiest way to do it is go to Google, say FAA space ACS or FAA space PTS, and you'll get a list of them. And you can download them. That's your new test standards now. So no more PTS for flight instructor. Okay, so that's the news that you should know. The news that you may not know is that the FAA Reauthorization Act was just signed into law. And in there were specific GA things. That's very rare. So that was the good work of FASANA, Flight School Association of North America. And one of those provisions was the mandate that the FAA create a national office that will manage, standardize, appoint, and train DPEs. So there'll be one office, it'll be a national office, and all DPEs will be going through that office. So there'll be no more kingdoms anymore, hopefully. And I think the only thing I'm going to use the FISDOs for is just for enforcement. And I don't know if they're going to have their own team of people who I don't think they would, but I think they would use FISDO to do one or two tests, observe tests a year. They might do that. But anyway, all the standardization, which is coming from AFS 800 now, which is Everett Rashon's group. He's quite skilled. He was a pilot and officer in the Navy, and did a lot of really good work. So he knows how to get things done. He's been realigning everything, all the knowledge tests, all that stuff's now under him. So he's moved all that stuff in the right way. So hopefully we get the right thing going. They also in that same package for the DP, they will the FAA is mandated to record how long it is that people are waiting for tests to make that known. And so then if there's some issue regionally, so if something is where we can't get tests in a particular region, then that office is required then to add additional DPEs to fill the public need. So that's in there. And the last thing is, within 18 months, they want basic med to be able to use by DPEs. Currently, you have to have a third class medical at least. No provision for basic med. That was an oversight, I'm pretty sure. But to get that realigned, they just put it in the act. So if you want to read the act, it's there. I read through some of the GA stuff, but that's the most important stuff to me. Was that it's about time we got standardization. I've been complaining about this for a long time. But anyway, I'm going to stop talking now because I want to introduce Hobie Tomlinson. He's in Burlington, Vermont. He runs a company up there, a flight training company, Montair, and he does a lot of multi-engine stuff. And so he's been doing it a long time. He's a former DP as well, so he's been done plenty of tests and multi-engine airplanes. And I'm going to be quiet and I'm going to say hello, Hobie, and tell us what you got.
How you doing, Mike? Well, I thought today I'd like to talk about how you can safely train some of these asymmetric flight maneuvers. I mean, if what started all this was on my birthday, 14th of January this last year, they spun that Baron into the ground up in Westfield, Mass. And I looked at that, and that was a pretty experienced instructor. But one of the things that's come out on that is that on the initial accident report, they said they found ice on the airframe at the accident site. So now that all makes sense to me because I don't know if you've ever experienced an icing stall. I've seen a couple of them, but they're very different. And the airplane stalls the whole wing and it stalls at much lower AOA. So obviously, and they were low, but they had an overcast. So lessons learned. The airplane's got to be, in good shape when we do that. So anyway, there are ways to safely train this the asymmetric thrust so people can experience it. One of the things that's happening is that because everybody's so afraid of the way the FAA does it, and you can't be afraid of things, but you have to respect them. And the the way they do it, you can get in a lot of trouble if the wrong things are done. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So, this was a, obviously that's the right engine shut down, but that was the side I was sitting on. But it just happened to be a good day, and I thought that was a good caption for what we're doing here. So this is me. My whole career in pictures, that's where I sold in 1960, and then in the charter days, that was the king air of the time. I fell in love with the old BH-18. That was quite a machine. And then we went to something a little bigger. That's just, I spent 14 years in the training department, TWA, and did a lot with the 747, which is, it was pretty neat. It was like having your own little flight school with Boeings. But anyway, champ to champ, that's a career. So I want to look at some training axioms, and just these are just kind of guidelines that I use that I talk about. But the first one is we're going to fly pitch maneuvers. Pitch plus power plus configuration equals performance. And one of the things in model engineer planes is you teach the pitch settings for different maneuvers. We go through phase of flight, like initial climb, cruise descent, initial approach. And what is the configuration for each one? What is the pitch attitude for each one? And approximate power setting. And if you know that, it's pretty easy to go to those things right off. Now, I hear people talk about holding airspeed, but remember, airspeed is a performance instrument, not a controlling instrument. Pitch is a controlling instrument. So the bottom line is whenever you're moving the controls, you're either looking out the window for pitch and bank, or you're looking at your artificial horizon for pitch and bank. And you need to know where the targets are. And one of the things we talk about a lot is if you have an airplane with a flight director, always have it up on departure, because that's 7 degrees is a magic pitch attitude for all airplanes. It's on the Boeings, it's on the beach. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But one of the things we do in initial student is we sit down and we talk about these pitch and bank. And actually, I'm going to put a plug in here for ABS, because in the Barrens they have all that done. You can if you join ABS, you can pull that all up and look at it. And if you're in a different airplane, it's a good outline to build one. So the other thing is elevators control flight path. And I bring this up because I do a fair amount of Cirrus instructing. And in fact, transitioning people from Cessna in the flight training business came up with a constant power variable drag approach. But that is not the way you fly airplanes. I mean, you want to fly your flight path with the elevator, and the throttles are going to control your speed. And one of the things I see all the time is when people are off speed, they'll descend out of the proper approach path, or they'll climb above it, which now you've got two errors. So if you stay with your flight path and adjust your power, then you only have one error. All your errors in energy, errors in airspeed. So we want to teach pitch power combination targets. We just talked about that. We're going to teach them for one and two engines. So one of the things we do in training is we do what I call power trades. In other words, any maneuver, I should be able to go from two engines to one engine. I should know what the power settings are. And that works well. But one of the things I want to hammer on is never control yaw with ailerons. And one of the things that's happening nowadays is that the modern airplanes are pretty tolerant of misuse of ailerons. The old ones aren't so much, and twins definitely aren't. So ailerons are used obviously to bank the airplane, to turn the airplane, but they should never be used to control yaw. That's what rudder's about. And one of the things you see in single engine airplanes all the time is people, especially in tailwheel airplanes, people forget about the gyroscopic effect. So even if they're tracking well, the minute they lift off, you'll see the airplane bank left, and then they put it back right. But remember, you need more rudder, not bank. So the other thing is energy. They take a line from the fighter guys: energy is life. So when you're at the proper performance speeds, that's all it's going to do. And depleting your energy is only a momentary success, because all airplanes have proper speeds for best performance, but they also have below that minimum speeds for control. And if you deplete the energy below your best performance speed, you're going to have control issues. So the other thing is, don't get in a rush. I hear people talk about mall engine training and say how quick you have to do this stuff. No, you don't have to do it quick. You have to do it accurately. And there's an old safety saying that some mistakes can only be made once, and that is true. You want to make sure that you're doing the proper steps, and you have time, actually. That's a myth that you have to do things super fast. So accuracy is more important than speed. Now, the other thing, OEI, one engine operative power available, is a function of rudder authority. So if you're on one engine, when the rudder hits the stop, the only choice you have is to back the power off. And actually, I don't like defining VMC as a speed. That's just a number that the test pilot's got. VMC occurs when the rudder hits the stop. And if that happens, you have to do something to get it off the stop, either by reducing the power or getting more airspeed. Automation is a two-edged sword. People get too involved in automation. I mean, under all that automation, it's just a basic airplane. So, you can look out the window and fly the airplane, especially in mall engine training. Initially, it's all VMC. Automation is a great help. But if it starts to confuse you, it's an old saying in airline business that reducing automation, reducing workload. So don't get over concerned with programming stuff if you have other things going on. And the other thing is, there's a huge difference between rated and proficient, right? And one of my things that bug me is that we can teach people how to fly instruments and they never go to the cloud. And what you find is, when you get in the cloud and you don't have your peripheral vision, it's a very different world. The other thing is, we do mull engine training with simulator, and how quick can we get it done? And we're teaching the test, and that'll get you a license, but it does not make you a proficient mull engine pilot. So it was interesting. I was watching the other night on the SAFE mentor site in one of the things Dorothy asked was, what scares you the most in training? And it's student impulsivity. Every once in a while, a student's going to do something. And an impulsive action to me is something that's totally off the chart. It's like, well, one of the exciting ones I had was doing a elevator trim stall with a student one day, and he put fold down elevator. That was pretty interesting. So the way you're going to protect about that is, when you're the pilot monitoring, and it's, in other words, your instructor, so your student is flying, you're the pilot monitoring, you need to be mentally flying that airplane all the time. And that's how you're going to tell when to intervene, because if you're mentally flying the airplane, then you have an idea where the airplane should be going. And if it doesn't go there, then that's the time to start watching what's going on. And you have to guard the controls, because now, guarding controls is not holding on to the controls, but it's being able to get them very, very quickly. Because if they do something really off the wall, you have to stop it. And if your hands are in your lap, you aren't going to have time. So, especially in some of these critical maneuvers, you have to have your hands ready to act if you need to. And if you have a question whether you should intervene or not, intervene, because after a while, you're going to learn, but better intervene too quick than too late. So then I want to talk just a moment about the Tecum and the Diamond DA-62 twins. And they're highly automated airplanes. And though that's going to get you a standard rating, it does not prepare you to fly a classic twin. And the other thing with the Tecum is, or the Diamond, they're relatively low powered. The Diamond gets away with it because it's got a very long wing on it. The Tecum is just a very, actually, the Tecum twin weighs less than 172 at gross weight, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, there's nothing wrong with training in those. But what I want to say is that if you go to a classic twin, be sure you get some training in it. There's a huge difference between a Tecum and a Baron. So one of the things we're talking about, basically propeller piston twins. And so one of the things that We do obvious mag checks, but we really want to make sure the governor works because we need to be able to control the propeller. Now, the governor has two functions on a piston twin. One is he controls the RPM, wherever you set it, and that's the pop-up valve. But there's another valve that shuts the oil off to the propeller. And on most current piston twins, oil pressure keeps the propeller unfeathered. Actually, if you had an oil, it's funny, you don't really need to monitor oil pressure because if you really lost oil pressure, the airplane's going to auto feather. But I've got into different twins when I'm flying an owner. I do a lot with owner airplanes. And I've seen them where I move the governor and I can't control the RPM. Well, that's not so dangerous, but I had one. I went to fly with a gentleman and we did a feather check and it wouldn't feather. And boy, that's a no-go because the airplane will not fly on one engine if it's got a windmilling prop. So that is something you need to check. If you get into turboprops, they either have auto feather in the Beechcraft King Airs or they have in what they call NTS, which is almost auto feather in the Garretts. But if those don't work, there again, your speeds are based on those things working, so they have to work. The turbojets, the big thing there would be an uncommanded thrust reverser, which is bad news. They fixed that mostly now because an uncommanded thrust reverser should snap the throttle closed. Didn't used to be that way. So we're going to start off. One of the things we teach is rejected takeoffs. And rejected takeoff, when you, I usually do that with a mixture control because cutting the mixture means the student can have both hands on the throttles. But when you do that, that airplane is not controllable till the throttles are closed. So that's not something you're going to spring on somebody. You're going to talk about it and brief it, and probably I'm going to do an additional RTO with less than full power so they can see the yaw rate. But because it's going to turn, there's just no way to stop it from turning to get the throttles closed. I use a minimum of 100-foot runway width to do that, which is interesting. You see that number come up a lot on using reverse thrust and on narrow runways. They don't recommend it. So I teach aborts from static thrust takeoff. If you look at the ACS, it says the maximum engine failure speed is 50% of VMC. Now, one of the things that's interesting is we have a VMC air and a VMC ground. They're talking about VMC air. So you want to do this, and the lower the airspeed is when you cut the throttle, cut the single throttle, the more yaw you're going to get. So the worst case is a slow RTO. So typically on an RTO, I would, after we've gone all through this, you start with a short field takeoff, which is static thrust, full power. Now you can't always get full power without, when you get into like the Barron, sometimes the brakes don't like full throttle, but you bring it all the way up and then bring the throttle up. And the minute you get it rolling, you just pull the mixture and idle cut off. And when you do that, you have to be able to be ready to. I pull one mixture out of cut off, bring my hand over the student, and the throttles aren't closed. I close the throttles with his hand. Interesting thing is, once the throttles are closed, you can push the mixture back up and the engine goes to idle. You don't have to deal with a hot start. But remember, VMC is affected by crosswind. So in VMCG, because we don't bank the airplane, it's a very different thing. Now, transport airplanes, which have accelerate go capability, they give you a VMCG, and VMCG V1 can never a V1 can never be below VMCG. That's the bottom one. That's the minimum speed you can go on. But because the airplane wants to yaw into the wind, if you fail an upwind engine, you're going to get a much worse yaw than if you fail a downwind engine. So one of the things with touch teaching these in crosswind, you're going to fail the downwind engine, which is the now the tendency of the airplane to yaw into the wind and the tendency to turn to fail engine are going to mitigate the yaw rate a little bit. And like I say, basically, the easiest way to on the engine rather than yanking the throttle closed is better off to cut it with a mixture. And also that way the student can have both hands on the throttle. So like I say, we brief this, we do it with partial power, and then we do it full power. But if you're the instructor, then once I do that, full throttle, release the brakes. The minute it starts to have some airspeed, boom, mixture off, hand over the student's hand. And if he hasn't closed the throttles, you close them because you cannot, there's no way to stop the yaw with that amount. So loss of control of ground is immediate unless you close the throttles. So immediate, like I say, immediate intervention is required if the student fails to correctly respond. So you close the throttles. And like I say, once the mixture is pulled back, my hand's over his hand or her hand, boom, close the throttles. So that is the RTO. And then we talked a little bit on another briefing about takeoff performance, but we're flying Part 23 airplanes, and Part 23 airplanes do not have accelerate go capabilities. Now, they do through the jets, but pistons do not. If you have a Part 25, a transport airplane, it either can go or stop always. And in transport airplanes, we talk about V1 minimum. That's V1 minimum is the minimum speed you can go, and that has to be above the MCG. V1 maximum is the maximum speed you can stop, and that has to be less than VR. So you have a lot of runway, which is what I try to do with twins in training. You have a lot of runway. Then you have a range of options. And what they've found in the transport world is stopping is way more hazardous than going. So we tend to use VR minimum when we can. Now, that being said, in piston twins, stopping is not an issue. Control is an issue. So you're gonna start the abort at a low speed, but I want to take off at a high speed. Now, remember the manufacturers, when they design an airplane and they get out and they do their test numbers, what are they trying to do? They're trying to give you the lowest takeoff distance they can get. So they're going to take that airplane off slower than it needs to be. The weakest point in any twin engine airplane, this is true about all two engine airplanes, but the most critical performance issue is what they call second segment climb. And it's after gear up your initial climb to, in the jets, typically 15 up to 1,000 feet. In the pistons, it used to be to 400 feet because they had a 5 minute max takeoff power limit. But they've, we don't have that on our little airplane. So I usually carry second segment up to 1,000 AGL, just like the jets. And the reason is, when you change the power setting of piston engines, it's going to fail. That's where it's most likely going to fail. And altitude is your friend. The other thing you're going to see on takeoffs is you don't want a flat, high speed departure with a low climb rate and high speed because your kinetic energy is lost instantly with a windmill and prop, where potential energy of altitude is not lost. So what we're going to do is we're going to move the, if we have the runway, we're going to move the liftoff speed up. And what I like is to use VXSE minus 5. Now, there again, never yank an airplane into the air. When you hit rotation speed, nice 1 degree per second, nice smooth rotation to liftoff attitude, and let it sit there, which is about 5 degrees nose up, and it's going to fly when it's ready. The old jets used to roll quite a ways. Piston airplanes don't. If you use the VXSE minus 5 as your rotation point, it's going to come off at VXSE. And this is where your 7 degree flight director comes in, because it's going to lift off at 5. You want to go to 7 degrees of pitch. And at 7, it's going to climb and accelerate. Now, as soon as we have positive rate of climb, and they define that by three things. One is that the vertical speed is up. Two is the altimeter is increasing. And three is obviously you can see that the runway is falling away. Once I have positive rate of climb, I want the gear up, because I don't know if you've ever, the only airplane I ever taught airborne abort was a twin Comanche. And the twin Comanche is kind of a special case because that big nose gear and the low main gear, it was set at a positive angle of attack, and you couldn't keep that on the ground until you had enough speed. So, but we have a runway next door. It used to be an Air Force base. It's 11,000 feet. And to lift that off, throttle it back, and land it, you're talking 6 or 7,000 feet, absolutely minimum. So the odds of that happening are very low. So my rule of thumb is, as long as my hands are on the throttle, and always, 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 even a single engine, have your hands on the throttle and takeoff roll. But as long as my hands are on the throttles, I'm going to bring both throttles close and stop. Once I move my hand off the throttle to put the gear lever up, we're going to go. Now, light twin gears are pretty fast. A bearing gear is incredibly fast. So once it's airborne, 7 degrees of pitch, gear comes up. And now, it's by that time, it's going to come airborne at VXSE. When the gear comes up, you're going to be VYSE. And now you're going to pitch it up. All light twins will probably go to 10 degrees of pitch. Even a Baron I've seen go to maybe 12 sometimes. Because what I want altitude as quickly as I can get it. The area of risk on a takeoff is from when I no longer from the point I no longer can stop until the point I have that airplane clean and climbing away from the airport. So, all these light twins, if you manage them right, will continue to fly on one engine unless it's grossly overweight or you have a super high density altitude. The single engine service ceiling for a four cylinder twin is probably around 4,000 feet. A Baron, closer to 7 or 8,000 feet, actually. So that area decision is right there between when I lift off and when I've got 400 feet gear up and I'm climbing away. So the big thing I'm recommending on single engine takeoff or all twin engine takeoffs is don't try to get airborne minimum speed. Bring it up to VXSE -5, comes off at VSSE, or VXSE, 7 degrees of pitch, gear up. Once you have VYSE, then bring it, then maintain VYSE up to 1,000 feet. And that's going to be put you, it's going to give you the minimum time where you're at risk, basically. And like I say, altitude can always be traded for speed, but a windmilling prop will kill speed so quick. It's amazing. So if you have the engine failure now, once the gear is up, then the pitch goes back to 7 degrees, 7 to 5 degrees. And typically, 20% of on one engine, you lose 50% of your power and 80% of your performance. So you can look at your vertical speed. And 20% of that's what you're going to have if you lose an engine on beat. We get some interesting density altitudes up here, but doing this stuff at 3 or 4,000 feet density minus 3 or 4,000 feet density altitude gives you some impressive climb. But typically, a six engine, a six cylinder twin is going to climb out probably 1,000, 1,200 foot a minute. So it's going to give you a couple. It's going to give you 200 to two. Six cylinder may give you 300 foot a minute. All of them should give you 200 foot a minute. And so, but remember, here's do not, you just gotta do a low climb rate and have patience once you do this. So on an engine fare and takeoff, the first thing we talk about is keep it straight with a rudder and lower the nose 5 degrees. So boom. And you don't even need to look at the engines. You're looking out the window. Stop the yaw with the rudder. Bring your nose down to 5 to 7 degrees. Now you've got time. It's probably 10 seconds before this is going up. It's probably 10 seconds before this is going to stop to start to settle. So once I kept it straight, I go back to 5 to 7 degrees of pitch. The old guys used to say, wind your watch, but put 1 foot off the rudder, put on the floor. Because when a student's under tension, which he is, he's going to be pushing with both feet. And don't even look at the gauges. You put 1 foot on the floor. I got 1 foot on the rudder. Now we know which engines. So if it's your left foot on the floor, then look at the knobs. Don't just start moving knobs. Remember, beach aircraft, the throttles are in the center, not on the left. So you got to look over there. So I kept it straight. I've lowered the profile. I've lowered the pitch to 5 to 7 degrees. I put 1 foot on the floor. I say, okay, my left foot's on the floor. I look over there and I physically look at the left throttle and put my hand on it. You move the throttle slowly back, nothing should change. If anything changes, you got the wrong throttle. So I should be able to bring it all the way back with absolutely no change in sound, no change in flight control. And then I'm going to go up and put my hand on the propeller. And so I've identified it with the throttle. My foot's on the floor. And now I'm going to bring the propeller slowly back, no change. If I get it all the way back to the feather D10 and I've had no change, boom, through the gate. So then, if I'm not on fire, I'm going to leave the mixture for then. I'm going to make sure that I put my hand, look and touch, hand on the flap lever, make sure the flaps are up, hand on the gear lever, make sure the gear's up. And then I'm just going to sit there and climb out. So in a Baron, let's say I'm climbing out 120 and I'm doing 200 foot a minute. That means I'm going to, it takes 5 miles to get to, it takes 5 minutes or 10 miles to get to pattern altitude. Now, you're better off to do just half standard banks because there's no change in stalling speed. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So that's the bottom line, just patience. It's interesting. I did some training down in Rutland, Vermont, and we were operating to the south. This was in a P Baron, but we did this. We flew down the valley for quite a ways before I could find a place or got high enough so I could turn around and go back. But patience works. As long as you've got the speed and you're climbing, you're good. So this is what it looks like. There's the area of decision. From where I can no longer stop, drive the gear up. And basically 400 feet is what we use for testing, but if the gear's up, it's going to go if you don't have a terrain challenged airport. All right, so now we're in here. I want to talk about lift drag because we have to know what these airplanes are going to do. And the lift drag demonstration is so that you know the performance loss you have for different configurations. And you really need a smooth day for this. We're up in the mountains, and if I get lift and sink, it does not work well because it changes. We're trying to measure small numbers, and lift and sink doesn't work. So the bottom line is, I do this in a descent. And so remember, we're up high because on the normally I do all training with the FAA says you have to have a 3,000 foot floor from all the engine training, but we use 5,000 foot AGL floor for training. So we're probably 6,000 feet we're doing this. So slow to blue line and really take your time. I want to get it trimmed up. I want to get the power on two engines so it's just flying and just enough to fly the airplane a blue line. And now I'm going to do a power trade, right? I'm going to bring the left engine back to zero thrust. I'm going to bring the right engine up to whatever power it takes to the blue line because I want to look at a couple maneuvers clean. And so we've got the airplane now flying just enough power in one engine with the other, the left engine zero thrust, right engine at power, the 2 degree bank, which is optimum for performance. So the first thing I'm going to do is actually, I've got these backwards. The first thing I usually do is I fly. We can do a 15 degree bank turn either way, half standard rate, and an airplane will fly level. Now, if I roll into a 30 degree bank, you notice it's going to start to sink. So, 30 degree bank probably going to cost you 100 foot a minute, basically, in a Baron. And if you go back to 15 degree bank, comes back. So, we're going to want half standard bank turns until we get some altitude. The other thing is, this is really interesting, is go to level flight. You got 2 degrees of bank, I go to level flight, you're going to find the rudder has to come in. You'll feel the rudder move quite a bit to keep it straight and level. And then there again, it's going to start sinking 100, probably 100 foot a minute, maybe 150 foot a minute. Go back to 2 degrees of bank, it'll go back to level flight. And the last one I do, I don't know why I listed these backwards. The last one I do is I increase the speed. Now, a little increase of speed is going to cost you a lot. So if I go to blue line plus 10 knots, basically, it's going to be probably sinking 200, 300 foot a minute. I go back to blue line, it'll go back to level off. The trap is if I go 10 knots slow, it looks like I'm really doing well because the airplane's going to want to climb as I'm bleeding that speed off. It takes quite a while before it sinks. But the trap is you keep pulling it, trying to forward down low. You don't accept that small climb rate. You keep bringing your nose up, and eventually, you're going to run out of rudder. Now, if you try to, and we're going to talk about this, when you run out of rudder, if you bring the ailerons in, it's possible, and I've had discussions with other people about this. So it depends whether it stalls the wing with a down aileron or whether it stalls the rudder, but either one is catastrophic. So you have to, when you run out of rudder, you have to either reduce the power or lower the nose. Do not get on the ailerons. So anyway, once we've done those level flight maneuvers, then we're going to run through the configuration. We go to flaps approach, and a Baron, that's lift flaps. It'll fly with flaps approach with very little different, maybe even 100, as little as 100 foot a minute. So then we extend the gear flaps approach, and now we're going down probably 500 foot a minute. And if I go landing flaps with gear down, it's going down 750 foot a minute. Now, I've got an error in this slide. I say landing configuration, left mixture. You're going to simulate idle cutoff, is what that should say. So you're going to take the left throttle and go from zero thrust to hard closed. And now you're going to see this. It's in a 6-cylinder twin. It's probably going down 12 to 1500 foot a minute. And then I just back out of the whole thing, right? Go back to zero thrust. Goes back to 750 foot a minute sink. Go back to approach flaps, gear down, back to about 500, put the gear up, back to about 100, put the flaps up, is back to level flight. So what are we doing with this? If I have 300 to 200 foot a minute climb, I know I can't have any of those configurations. Now, one of the mistakes people make in single engine approaches is that, remember, in a typical ILS or a precision approach, I'm descending roughly 500 foot a minute. So if I had a 200 foot a minute climb capability, I'm descending 500 foot a minute, then I have 700 feet of excess capability. So I can easily have approach flaps and gear. And if it's marginal gear first, then approach flaps. And we always fly no on a two-engine airplane, a single-engine approach is always with approach flaps. And if you've got the runway, land it that way, basically. So that being said, I want to look at some VMC demonstrations. Now, one of the things we want to give the student chance to fly this airplane a little bit and see how the airplane acts with a VMC roll. And this is what we're going to do is we're not going to block the rudder because I don't like blocking the rudder because what are you teaching if you block the rudder? You're teaching he doesn't have to push the rudder that hard. I mean, the rudder can be stiff. Matter of fact, if you look at what's allowable for rudder pressure, it's I think 140 pounds. That's a lot. I mean, now you're talking about something big, like maybe a Condor 440 or something. But anyway, then a Baron or a P Baron, you're probably going to end up in 50, 60 pounds of a foot pressure. I mean, people are tired. And I don't let them use rudder trim for this because I want them to know how much it takes to push that rudder to stop. So we're going to start wings level. Now remember, when we go to wings level, for every the red line they give you was done with a 5-degree bank. For every degree of bank I take out, I've increased my VMC by 3 knots. So if I go from 5-degree bank to level flight, we have a 15-knot increase in VMC, which is what I want. Because I'm not trying to certify the airplane, I'm trying to show people how it acts. So wings level, now because there's different airflow over the engines, I have three airflows on a twin. I have free stream air outside the propellers. On the windmilling engine, I have less than free stream air because I have the windmilling propellers taking energy out of the stream. Behind the operating engine, I have more than free stream air. So the two wings are providing different lift. It's going to take maybe 3 or 4 degrees of aileron input to neutralize that. But once I have that, so it stays level, that's all I'm going to use. So nice startup around a 130 knots. I don't start as slow as the FAA does because and we just want a nice, now this is a climbing maneuver. We want a nice level, a nice shallow climb. And what I have the student tell me is when the rudder hits the stop. So he's just keeping it level. No, and I'm guarding the aileron because I don't want any aileron input. That is dangerous. So when it gets to the rudder, gets to the stop, that's VMC. In the real world, that's where I put the nose down. But I want to show them what the bank is not dangerous if you're not on the ailerons. So when the rudder gets to the stop, you just let it very gradually starts to roll off. And you let it go to about 20 degrees of bank. This is a very gradual roll. And now, if I'm 1,000 feet in the air, I'm not going to yank the power off. I'm going to put the nose down. But we want to do it relatively. We want to get airspeed back relatively quick. So the target pitch attitude there, once I start to recover, is 10 degrees nose down. The speed comes right back up. As the speed comes up, you'll see the airplane roll level. So if I have altitude, and in the real world, you're not going to let it roll. When you get the rudder against the stop, I'm going to pitch the nose down. So I get the rudder, oh, I want the rudder always off the stop. And when I'm really flying one engine and operative. So that's my first demonstration. Now we're going to go back and do the second thing. And now we're going to talk of power recovery. Now, I'm going to use a power recovery because if I'm down low or if I'm in a, let's say I'm out west and have a normally aspirated airplane and have an engine failure, it's going to go to the ground because my single engine system may be below ground level, and I have to accept that. That might, or I may have terrain that I have no choice but off airport landing. However, I'm not going to crash it at Blue Line. I'm going to slow it up. And this goes back to what we were talking about. The maximum asymmetric power I can use is determined by my rudder. So in this one, we do the same entry. Now, everything's the same. Wings level, aileron, only enough aileron to keep the wings level before we start. No rudder aileron trim. We let the roll produce to 20 degrees of bank. Now what we do is we're going to take the good engine. You're not going to jam the throttle closed because I want power, as much power as I can hold. We're going to bring it back probably between half and two-thirds. And as you do that, you're going to see the airplane roll level. So I've got full rudder stop. I bring the throttle back till the airplane rolls level. Now, what I want him to see is that he has to manage the throttle with the rudder he has. So what I do with this and this one, I just keep letting it slow up. Right, as it slows up, you keep bringing the throttle back. One of the deals with this is people want to take their feet off the rudder, but this is a full rudder maneuver, and you can walk it right back. And when you learn from those old World War II guys, they would have you do a single engine stall. I mean, if it did stall and you have enough rudder, it'll fall straight ahead like it always does. But we don't do that anymore because that. But that was how I was taught. But anyway, I bring it back till I'm right back well into slow flight and airplane's level. Well, now I can't jam the throttle open because it's going to run over on its back. So now what I have to do is I have to have a pitch recovery. I'm only going to use 5 degrees here because I have some power. So I pitch it to 5 degrees, airspeed's down, airspeed starts to increase. Guess what? It's turning into the operating engine. Now, as it turns into the operating engine, I stop the turn by walking the throttle back forward, and bingo, when it gets back to VXSE, the throttle's all the way up. So what that is a really great exercise to understand that you're managing your power based on your rudder authority. So those are my two training maneuvers that I do with a Mullen generating. The other one, these can be demonstration maneuvers, but what we want to see that VMC is variable, right? So we have already done a wings level VMC, and you notice that in that one you get about, and this is why you don't worry about stalling, because at a wings level your VMC is going to be probably about VXSE. It's going to start to roll off. But now what we're going to do is we're going to do that same maneuver with a 5 degree bank into the dead engine. So now I've upped my VMC 30 knots from the red line. Excuse me. So in that bank, VMC is going to roll off above blue line, basically. So what are we showing? VMC is a condition, not an airspeed. Hammer away at that. That red line, I almost wish it wasn't there. VMC occurs when you have full rudder deflected, bottom line. So if I'm working with people that are going to instruct in twins, this is one other demonstration. If I have somebody that's really good, I'll let him practice this. But this is a dynamic VMC. And what happens is we're going to set up a condition where when we have the engine failure, the airplane's going to be below the full of VMC for the condition. So we're up at 6,000 feet and we're going to simulate a takeoff. So we're in takeoff configuration, full throttle. We started takeoff, climb, blue line plus about 10, actually. And we get from 60, say 6,300, 6,400 feet. You can just cut the mixture on that low engine. The minute you do that, because with that bank in the wing down, the minute you cut that mixture, the airplane's going to start to roll. So the reason I like the mixture is you can have your hands on the throttles if you're doing it. Now, if I'm doing it, I have the student cut the mixture, and I have my hands on the throttle. But the minute he cuts the throttle, it's going to start to roll. Full rudder, no aileron, just bring the throttles right back to half, two-thirds back. The minute you do that, the airplane rolls level. Boom. end discussions. Okay, so now I have control. I can't bring the power back up because I don't have enough speed. So I'm right back to my airspeed recovery. I have to go to 5 degrees nose below the horizon. I have to as it and I and I'm holding the rudder 5 degrees below the horizon. As the airspeed starts to increase, it starts to turn into that good engine. There again, because the mixture's off, I can even walk both throttles back up. There again, 1 foot on the floor, so I know which one it is. Once you get back to V, Y, X, actually even V, Y is it XSE. I've got full throttle again. And it's interesting, this one you can walk right through it. You can run into a feathering drill with this because once I've got my power back up and my correct airspeed and airplanes under control, I can there again foot on the throttle, look, verify, throttle close to verify, propeller control back to make sure I got the right engine, feather it, and you can walk right into a zero thrust. And it's an interesting maneuver to take that through to zero thrust, and you can let them do some maneuvering with the engine feathered. So now we want to look at the FAA practical test demo. Now, this can be done safely, but there are some differences. First of all, they're going to initiate it at VYSC in takeoff configuration. Okay, so that's a little slower than I'm doing it. I usually do it at cruise climb, but it doesn't matter. We're going to initiate it with the critical engine windmilling. So what happens is to set this up, once I'm at VYSC, I'm going to bring the left engine back. Usually that's a critical. And I don't find counter-rotating propellers make that much difference, really. So I still always work with the left engine because that works with all airplanes. So to get it windmilling, the throttle is hard closed. The good engine, the right engine, you ease up to max power. So you start this with the mixture's full, register props full up. I bring the left engine back to idle. The right engine comes to full throttle. I start that climb at, they say, at VSSE plus 10. Now, VSSE is safe single engine, and more the newer twins, they give you a number for that. That's the slowest speed you ever want to do a dynamic engine cut. But in fact, if you don't have that, VXSE works. And that's why I use that minimum airspeed is VXSE, because that will sustain a dynamic engine cut. You can control it. Now, if you look at the PTS, and I just looked at the new one the other night, and it says use the bank for optimum performance. That is not 5 degrees, that's 2 degrees. So that's all the bank you want. The lower bank you have, the safer this maneuver is. So 2 degrees is best performance. And in fact, then you just start to climb. Same deal. Before I start to climb, I've got the aileron set to maintain my 2 degrees of bank, and I don't change it. Leave the aileron there. Establish the climb. And it's a shallow climb. You want the airspeeds. You know, 1 knot per second comes from test flying. That's all they always do, that slow deceleration. And they see it the first indication of full rudder deflection, and probably that's what you're going to have if you use a 2 degree bank. Uncommanded roll, you don't need to wait to uncommanded roll. When the rudder hits a stop, that's VMC. And do not stall the airplane. Ailerons will stall the airplane. Immediately pitch to 5 degrees nose down, reduce power to the operating engine. So they want a combination. They want a combination of the thing. Now, I need to talk about an up emergency upset recovery, because if you get on the ailerons, this airplane is not a normal spinach. This airplane's going to snap roll. And in fact, you know, one of the things that's interesting, if I, and this has nothing to do with twins, but I would recommend an upset recovery program for everyone. I was so lucky that my boss, before I got done, he got me in Calspan, had a variable stability Learjet. And you could pretend it was a 737. We went up and did a lot of these things in the Lear. So you get the G forces. But boy, if you can get into a decathlon with somebody, go up there and see what a snap roll looks like, because it's very different. So if This airplane snaps on you. You can't wait. You've got to immediately. And this is an upset of what they call a departure in the military. It's any kind of wildly loss of control because the wing is stalled and you cannot let this thing develop to spin. It's unrecoverable. So any kind of deal, but you're gonna immediately close the throttles and point the airplane straight down. I mean, with very positive forward push. We're talking about half G to zero G. Throttles, yank both throttles, not close gently. Yank both throttles close and zero G the airplane straight down, right? No aileron, full rudder. And bottom line is there's no stalling. As stalling speed goes up with G load, it also goes down with G load. So at zero G, there's no stalling speed. And what that does is reattach the airflow. And then as you're going to just aim this thing vertically down and prevent it from rotating. And now, once the speed's coming up and it's flying again, then you're just gonna do a normal recovery. You know, probably no more than 2 degrees of pitch. That's interesting. I've had airplanes over on my back. I did some training in an Aerostar, and the first Aerostar I ever flew was a funny stalling airplane. I don't know if it was rigged right. I've flown later Aerostars, but this one. You know, we were going to do accelerated stall and it stalled. I mean, it rolled right over and burned it. So, you know, there again, same deal. Throttles closed, point the airplane down, roll it right side up, pitch it to the horizon. And that works with anything. Now, remember, never use rolling G's. So get it right side up and then fly to the horizon. And if you get a lot of out of trim, you may have to, you know, if you would. The trim tab is capable of exerting a force equal to the square of the difference between trim and actual speed. What do I mean by that? If you took your 172, trimmed it to 60, dove it to 120, and let go, just a tab would put 4 Gs on the airplane. So one of the things people don't realize is at overspeed, you may have to push, not pull. All right, single engine approaches here. And we talked about that. Fly a standard approach. So in a standard approach in a twin, you would use approach flaps. Then when you're one dot, you're down to go down, right? Whether that's a 5 mile final, whether it's turning base on a visual approach or 5 miles out on a visual. Once I start the final approach to the runway, I want the gear down. So you would come into the airport typically with approach flaps and a bearing. One dot, put the gear down. And if I'm on one engine, that's all I'm going to use is approach flaps and gear. And even with two engines, I don't usually go to full flaps until I'm, say, 400 feet down at minimum. Landing's assured. And with approach flaps, I bring the props forward because the twin will sit there and go, rah, 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 rah. You know, we're trying to be good neighbors. So with two engines, full flaps means props forward. Next is rich. Now with one engine, I'm going to use approach flaps or no flaps if I'm struggling. Then I gear down when I start down. And you know, Beach teaches this. It's really good. If you do the gear with approaching the glide slope, then what you had for power pretty much because I'm going from level flight to a gear down flight, when power really doesn't change. The secret on this thing is don't jockey the throttle. And I want to come into that, I want to come into that descent point with the correct speed so I don't have to bleed speed there. And then if the power is constant, the rudder's constant, it flies just like it always does. And if you have to move the throttle, just bring it up an inch or two. Don't jockey the throttle. You're better off to accept a small airspeed excursion than you are to be screwing around with the throttle all the time. Now, BL, blue line, and approach flaps. So I don't ever want, you know, ideally I'd like blue line plus maybe 5 or 10, but never less than blue line till landing's assured. And don't go into a small field. I mean, if I really have an engine failure, I'm looking for a place that's got probably 5,000 foot or more with an ILS, basically, or a GPS approach. Because remember, and one of the things, here's an interesting thing. I was looking through the instructor, multi-engine PTS, and it's got something I like in it, and that is they're not going to let you close the zero thrust engine throttle on landing. So it's amazing how much you're going to the prop drag on landing is substantial. You know, if you're in a short field, they pull throttles, the two engines pull throttles hard closed. But on this single approach now, you're going to leave the inoperative engine at zero thrust and land. So it's going to float quite a bit. You got to approach flaps until any short. Now, you can use full flaps. I don't know. Depends. If you got a low approach, don't mess around with flaps. It's going to change your whole sight picture. But if you have a good sight picture, I could use full flaps once runway is assured. Now, used to be we did ATPs in light piston twins, and that required a single engine go around. They will do a go around, but the rules, the safety rules are no go around below 400 feet AGL, which is circling minimums, because it's going to sink while you're cleaning the airplane up. And the other thing is no go around with full flaps because they don't have the energy to do that. But I do show all the instructors a go around. And that is at 400 feet, you just come up with full throttle with an operating engine. You already got the other one feathered at zero thrust. Of course, as the throttle moves, the rudder moves. And then you just have to go to blue. You have to go to pitch attitude. It'll sustain blue line until it's cleaned up. It's going to go back to 200 foot a minute again. And a lot of approaches up here in the mountains are higher because of the missed approach requirement. So anyway, I'm gonna open up to questions. This is me, right? I'm an independent CSIP. I'm doing Cirrus and BPPP. As you probably know, Bonanza's getting out of that officially, but we're still gonna be BPPP instructors. I like it. You know, I never did anything except fly airplanes. So you can see I got a fair amount of time. About 17,000 hours of that is dual. I did get lucky. In a year, there weren't a lot of strong competitors. So I got National CFI of the Year 2012. And actually, that was the year EAA Spirit of Flight Award started. So I got that. I got my CFI in 1965. It was a DPE 77 to 22. I was 14 years in the Tina Bay Training Center, which I loved. And I was a safe starting member, so I'm 11th time Master CFI. And Mr. Phillips decided I should be emeritus, so that's what I am now. So anyway,
yeah,
there's my favorite airplane. I love that airplane, but the 7.5 is more fun to fly. So
all right. So let we get some questions, right? What you wanted?
I'm gonna leave that with the best, the final thought, and let's talk, okay. Let's do questions.
Yeah. There you go.
So what do you got for questions, Mike?
I don't know. I got the chat open. So yeah. Are there any, what I can do is let me just say a couple things to round out the hour, and then I'll open up the room so they can actually ask you questions. It's probably easier that way. So let me take a look here. Okay. So anyway, just to catch up on just a few things. So I told you that the classes, the next power hour is going to be Raul, and he's a guy who understands sport pilot stuff really well, including sport pilot instructor. He's going to do the power hour on proficiency checks, which I don't know if you know, but if you want to add additional category of class and you have a sport pilot certificate, you don't need a DPE or FA. FA eventually, you need two CFIs, and you can do it with two CFIs. So he's going to talk about that. And then I think in the following week, we're going to do a segment on sport pilot stuff just in general, because this is now in the ACS, and I don't think a lot of people understand it very well. And and if Mosaic happens, which is the increase in the weight and all that, you're going to see a lot more sport pilot activity because they can fly 172s and other things. You'll find rotorcraft people who just get a sport pilot certificate airplane so they can build time, and they can log PAC time then when you're in the airplane with them. There's all these things, and that doesn't require a flight test. There's no chance of failure. So a lot of people are going to go that way. Okay, so I want to talk about that. Then next week we have our initial CFI class in Palo Alto, so I'll be there, and double I class right after that. The double I has one or two spots left. The other class is full. Of course, too late anyway for that one. And then we have a class in Las Vegas after the holiday. So we have a class there. I can't remember the exact date, but there's one. And that's filling up quickly. I think we have 7 in that class, and now we're restricted to having 12. We can't have 20, so because of the classroom size. So if you want in on that class, I would get in on that. And then the next one in Miami is going to be August. So also I wanted to say, I saw Wally was in the room. Just go through a few things and I'll open up the room. So Wally, I met, he's one of our students from Opa-locka in the last class. He passed his CFI the other day. In fact, I think everybody did. I didn't know about Austin, but everybody else passed on the first time, which was really good. Let me just go through. I don't see Sethany here, but I do see some people. I just want to acknowledge the people who are here. Alex, thanks, Alex, and Tammy. And I have Bruce. The Bruces are here, both Bruces. That's good. Cabot, I see you quite often now. And then who else is in here? Just Clifford with the capital CL. I forget about that. David St. George is here from SAFE. That's great. Okay. And Don Johnson is here. Edgar Mora, he directs the program at San Jose State University Aviation Program. So that's good. Frank Webster and Gary Weaver from Youngstown, Ohio is here. And iPad Bruce is here. I guess that's two of you, two Bruces. Maybe Lee Perrin's here. He's a regular. He's an anesthesiologist from north, Boston area, north of that. So up there somewhere. Mike Lyons is here. And Oliver from the Bay Area role. Salazar is here. He's going to be the one doing the stuff on the sports pilot stuff next week. So and we'll be doing that live from the CFI class as well. I'll be live from the CFI class. So that'll be really good timing to incorporate those changes with the ACS. So Soledad is here from the Dominican Republic, and Tom Mose is here, and Vino. Well, that sounds like something I should be having right now, but there you go. And I didn't see Walt. So Walt's missing in action, or changed his name. All right, so let me, I'm going to now open up the room. We'll just say we're done, because, and then you can ask whatever questions you want. And when you're done, I'm going to run down to the beach and do some last-minute errands before I have to get ready for an early morning flight to Palo Alto. So let me do this here. Unmute.